Welcome to the International Cinema Podcast. We have a special episode this week where we're going to talk a little bit about our experience at the 2019 Sundance Film Festival. I'm Chip Oskerson, one of the co-directors of International Cinema. I'm here in the booth with Mark Yamada.
Hello.
And Marie-Laure Julian Oskerson.
Good morning.
We collectively make up the directorship of the program, and one of the great experiences that we have every year is being able to go to film festivals to find material for international cinema, and Sundance is here in our backyard, so it's an opportunity that none of us should miss. We'll start off by saying, what are your overall impressions of the festival as a festival, and this year's edition particularly?
It was my first time actually going to Sundance, and so it was a really great adventure. I like being able to go to the different theaters, some of the older theaters in Salt Lake, and see these films. And I really enjoyed the way in which a lot of the filmmakers would stick around and not only introduce their films, but also take questions. I thought that was a really great feature, something you see at Sundance quite a bit. So that was really fun.
I like the way that Sundance brings out film culture in Utah, that it's just amazing to me that I'm going to some of these films from obscure places on the globe. And, not well-known filmmakers, that we still have a packed house, right? That there's kind of an enthusiasm for the fact that it is Sundance, right? And that there's, the brand kind of brings out, I think, some excitement. And it's nice that Sundance recognizes the importance of locals, right? So most of the action is up in Park City, and I never go up to Park City. I always go to the venues in Salt Lake City. And, it's not quite as much of a frenzy in Salt Lake City. The tickets are a little bit more available. You can buy individual tickets. And this is something that I hope that our students and local community know about and take advantage of, because it's a great way to see films before they come out, get that kind of early look. And like you're saying, be able to meet the filmmakers in a lot of cases and see it with an audience, right?
Right.
But that's one of the great things, too, is that there's an audience there that's reacting to what they're seeing. And there's always a feeling of it being very contemporary.
Right.
Some of the documentaries particularly that I saw, I mean, I don't know that I was even watching the final edit, really. And they're that kind of new to when they were filmed, and that there's something kind of fun about that. Well, let's start going through real quick, and what were the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, so I saw a couple films about women who were dealing with their ethnic heritage and interesting ways. They were both films that are kind of semi-autobiographical in nature. The first was The Farewell by Lulu Wang, who's a Chinese-American director. I think in some ways her life parallels that of the protagonist in the film. It's a film about Awkwafina's the protagonist, so kind of an it girl at the moment. But she plays a Chinese-American woman who goes back to China to say goodbye to her grandmother, who's been diagnosed with cancer and supposedly has only a few months to live. And it's interesting because the family kind of keeps this truth from the grandmother. And
this is kind of a cultural phenomenon.
It's a cultural thing. And even though Awkwafina, even though the character speaks Chinese and is raised in a Chinese home, that kind of American Chinese background creates a little bit of a misunderstanding about what's going on here. And so it's a really interesting film, mostly in little English, mostly in Chinese, shot mostly in China. So really great way of looking at Chinese culture, but through kind of this American Chinese perspective. So that was a really great one.
That kind of gives an American audience a little bit more of an in, right?
Right. I mean, she's kind of our focal point or focalization in the film. And so it allows us to kind of see Chinese culture in this way that she's kind of seeing it as well. And so interesting film in that way. And then another one by first-time filmmaker Minal Bagh, who is a Pakistani-American director, the film called Hala, which is in English in Urdu. Really interesting film, a coming-of-age, again, semi-autobiographical story about a teenager going through, in some ways, kind of the same teenage angst that most American teenagers go through, but also dealing with this kind of Muslim heritage and this Muslim inheritance that she's receiving. And so what I really liked about this film, though, was that in most coming-of-age films, it's kind of this, it's a male situation where men are kind of, young men are kind of taking on this patriarchal kind of inheritance. And here you get that at the beginning, but then it turns into more of kind of this maternal inheritance, which is in some ways kind of different, right? Way of thinking about inheritance and moving from one generation to the next. And so that was a really interesting film to see in that way. So, yeah, those two were kind of stood out to me as very similar films about women dealing with their ethnic heritage and kind of dealing with this American identity as well as this kind of ethnic religious identity as well. So yeah.
Your description of Hala reminds me of the film that we ran last semester at International Cinema, What Will People Say? That's set in Norway, but is similarly, it's a Pakistani family living in Norway and dealing with some of these same coming of age things, but made by a female filmmaker as well. Yeah, that interesting, you know, kind of connection.
I really think it's time for more of this, you know, I mean, the coming of age genre is really dominated by men and boys, and it's really time to think about maybe how it works in a more female context and how inheritance, you know, works. What kind of things are passed on from generation to generation between women?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, if we stay with feature films for a minute, Marie-Laure, what were some of the feature films that stood out to you?
Well, first I have to say that I love Sundance for the bold stories that it presents and the original voices that we get to hear. So the films that stood out to me are those stories. And the first one is a documentary, Maiden, by Alex Holmes. It's an English documentary, and it's portraying the forward-thinking female sailor Tracy Edwards, who in 1989, for the first time in the world, as a skipper, created or got together an all-woman crew to sail around the world, and in a very male-dominated race. So we look a little bit into her own history, but mainly it is about the race and about the crew. And her story is very engaging. She is fighting against this institutionalized sexism. The media are only looking for scandalous stories when they go to the all-male crews and they ask about technical aspect of the race. The questions that the Tracy Edwards crew got are just absolutely maddening about their relationships. And it's just really looking at, like, oh, these women, they can't make it and they won't make it. But and what's the dirt about them? So, I mean, we go through exhilarating moments where the team is doing so well to absolutely hope-crushing experiences with them. So not only is it exhilarating to be right there, reliving that race with them, but it's very humbling to realize that these women were doing this for the first time. So I highly recommend this.
Like, was this shot with... they're using historical footage, I take it.
Oh, a lot of historical footage. So you really feel there's a camera on board. Mm. So you are with the crew and you are going against the elements. You're seeing them day by day and the exhaustion as well that happens. It's a very physical thing. And then you have the footage from the media. So them coming into different towns and the joy and the absolutely the great support that they got as the race went on. I don't want to give too much away. So yes, it's a mix of that. And then the documentary as well goes to interview these women now and have them reflect on the experience. So it's a whole encompassing, very engaging story.
Very nice, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah, well, that's... I think that's one that we need to bring to international cinema coming up, like in our next programming.
Hopefully, if it doesn't get bought by Netflix, huh?
Yeah,
sucked up into the Netflix universe. Well, the advantage of being sucked up into Netflix is that, you know, a lot of people have access to it. But it's true, it denies it that opportunity to watch it together with the group, which is, like I said, one of the, you know, the pleasurable things. That reminds me, this kind of using historical footage, you know, going back to something. You had something else on your list, Mark, right? That was
right
along these lines.
Yeah, Apollo 11 by Todd Miller was a kind of interesting one. For me, it was kind of a serendipitous film. And I guess this kind of happens at Sundance where, you know, you plan on seeing these films and, you know, things come up and you're not able to kind of see the films that you want to see. And so, for me, this one, it kind of fit in between two films I wanted to see. And it wasn't one I was really dying to see, but I thought, okay, well, I might as well go, you know, because it's convenient and at the same theater. And I was really surprised. I mean, it was a really interesting film. It was cinematic, but it was also very intimate. You know, it's looking at the moon landing in 1969. And there's been recently a lot of films and dealing with that issue. I think First Man was another film that came out recently. But it's based on this footage that they found, this archive footage that never really kind of made its way into some of these more well-known films. And really provides more of a candid look at some of the things that were going on during the time. Not so much the polished kind of out front NASA control room that we're used to seeing, but more kind of the backstage scenes of what's going on and kind of the chaos that goes on as they're trying to do this. And then you get a little bit more of a candid look at Neil Armstrong, and not so much his kind of, you know, his well-known quote, but things that he says, you know, on the spot about his experiences. And so really interesting film in that way.
Do I understand that a lot of this was shot on 70 millimeter as well?
It was, yeah.
That's amazing.
It was shot in, and it was digitized and cleaned up, and it looks really great.
It must be an amazing image.
It's really beautifully shot, and there's no narrate. It's shot in a way that, you know, the images make sense and the storytelling makes sense through visuals, but really well made, kind of surprising in that way. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It kind of reminds me, too, we had Jane, the documentary about Jane Goodall last semester here, that was something similar, right? All of this footage that existed of her doing this work that had never really seen the light of day,
right,
and was edited together in a really fantastic way. This is something that that sounds really interesting and engaging. Well, if we're to stay for a minute with documentaries, I'll mention a few. Most of what I actually ended up seeing was documentaries. The Sundance added a lot of international documentaries for the first time this year. And one of the ones that really stuck out to me, not because it was kind of aesthetically groundbreaking in any particular way, but because of how immediate it was a film called Midnight Traveler by Hassan Fazili, Afghan refugee. And this is the story that was shot in real time about him and about his family. He made a film in Afghanistan a few years ago, and it drew the attention of the Taliban. And he was tipped off by a friend, a good lifelong friend who happened to be in the Taliban, that his name had been put on the Taliban hit list, basically, that they were coming after him. And so he fled with his family to Tajikistan, and from there started applying for asylum, and nobody would let him in. And so his time in Tajikistan ran out, and this is where the film picks up, that he and his family are going back to Afghanistan, and they're going to try and make it across to Afghanistan and eventually into Europe. And so what he did is they couldn't take film equipment, really. The whole thing is shot on cell phones. They're pretty good. I mean, I don't know that they're high-quality cell phones. The image wasn't distracting at all. I mean, he is a filmmaker, as his wife, actually. But you follow this journey with him and his wife and his two kids, and it's really harrowing. I mean, it puts you so much in their shoes as they move from Afghanistan to Iran, from Iran to Turkey, from Turkey they go into Bulgaria, from Bulgaria to Serbia, from Serbia into Hungary. And it's, every step of the way is absolutely harrowing, and for different reasons, that the conditions in one country are very different from those of another, how immigrants are treated there, how refugees are treated there. I mean, it really gets you thinking about our own national policies and what it means to be human. And so this is amazing. What they were doing is he was taking these SD cards that he was recording on and sending them to friends in the United States, because they didn't know from one day to the next whether they would have their possessions with them. That, I mean, they were regularly being, you know, kind of extorted by smugglers. And I mean, it's an amazing, amazing story. And really edited together beautifully. At the very end, they had a video message from the family. They had made it to Germany, but they still don't have passports. Germany denied their application for asylum because it had gone too long, they said, since they turned in their application. And so they were needing to start the entire process over again. But it was really an amazing film. I love those films that create empathy, that, you know, create that kind of immediacy.
That's great, yeah.
Another film that kind of along these lines that really stood out to me, but very different, was a film called Gaza. And Gaza was filmed by two Irish filmmakers who went to the Gaza Strip, lived in the Gaza Strip for, I want to say they took 5 years to film this, something like this. And in this case, the images are really stunningly beautiful. They had really, comparatively speaking,
no iPhone.
They weren't shooting this on iPhones at all. And their purpose in doing this was to not to show the things that typically show up in the news, but rather to show what is life like for people who live in Gaza. And I think it took a long time for them to earn the trust of the people. And they made the comment in the question and answer afterwards, saying that as they talked to people initially, a lot of people said, why would anyone be interested in our lives? And I think that there's very much a sense in Gaza that they have been, you know, the world has given up on Gaza, that they're not afforded, you know, much protection. And they're betrayed, you know, both by the government and by the Israelis who work as a kind of, you know, occupying force in a sense, caught in between. But what I liked about it is that it wasn't political. It wasn't trying to wade into the politics of Hamas versus Israel, but really just showing what this life is like. And it's really difficult, and in some ways difficult to watch, but inspiring at the same time, in that despite the abject poverty, to see the way that these people find joy as well. The other message that kind of comes out from it, that it really raises an interesting question about, can there be justice when there's a fundamental imbalance of power? Because there's such a disempowered people. Well, what about feature films? What feature films stood out to you? We started with feature films. We kind of went into documentaries. What other feature films?
Well, I got to see a few feature films. And the two that I'd like to talk about is Photograph, because our IC fans will recognize the name of Ritesh Batra. He made The Lunchbox a few years ago, and he's back with this film. The reviews pin this film as a quiet romance, and I quite agree with that, between a poor photographer in Mumbai and a shy student. It explores the gaps and the taboos, the differences, and other cultural clashes between the social classes. A photo in this film becomes an essential part of the story. It's the portrait that the photographer makes of the female protagonist, the student, where the student is able to see more than the timid woman that she is. She sees a happiness that she's never seen before, kind of asking us as filmgoers, you know, what do we see? What are films reflecting of us? I really like the message about what movies are, and reminding us of the fundamental unit of the storytelling in film being the still frame, the picture. And as well as pictures can be scattered, making us think about how the film is carefully organized. And I won't give it away, but the last scene is quite important in that regard. So that's Photograph. A beautifully filmed film, a quiet story. The other one is a science fiction, and that's a feature film debut for filmmaker Grant Sputoy, and that comes from Australia. It's a science fiction thriller. It's a jumper as well, if that describes it. At moments, you just jump out of your seat, not knowing what is coming next. But the main story is about this uninhabitable Earth where humanity has been wiped out. And this robot is raising a teenager called Daughter. So the main story is between Daughter and Mother, the android, female android. There's a lot of warmth between them, and it's so interesting to see how the film creates this.
Yeah, the mom keeps kind of rushing back in, right, when she's a baby.
And, yes.
And tending to her needs.
Oh, such a great mother.
Helicopter parenting to a certain degree.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. And there is like this lovely relationship as well, we could say. They're in this bunker, safe from the hostile outside world, very much protected. There is a lot of warmth. It's interesting how the film created that between a robot and a daughter and this teenager. And there's a lot of parenting and teaching as well. The daughter is carefully taught about life and about morality. What comes to distract this harmony, we could say, between the two is an unwanted visitor from the outside. And Hilary Swank does a really great job being this woman. And all of a sudden, this reality that was carefully protected and built between the mother and the daughter is completely shattered. And there again, I don't want to say too much, but what I came out from this film is a great reflection about actually a very spiritual reflection on my own relationship with God, with the divine. And I hope you get a spiritual message from it. It was very actually edifying for me. I hope you see this in this film.
There are so many plot twists in that film. Pulls you around, but they're thought-provoking at every turn.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is kind of a Noah story, you know, an allegory, that humanity's arc, and there's some, you know, interesting imagery even to reinforce that in the film.
And you kind of wonder how much of the warmth and the parental love is really just kind of this affect. I mean, you know, sometimes I wonder if parenting for me is just kind of this automated, you know, I'm kind of just following, you know, things that I'm told to do, or, you know, patterns that parents do. And so it's interesting, raises a lot of interesting questions.
All right, so these are some of the highlights of our experience at Sundance this last year. There's a lot of other really great films. We haven't talked about a lot of even the award-winning films. Hopefully, we'll have the chance to bring a lot of these to international cinema so that they'll find an even wider audience here in Utah. But thanks for being here today, Mario and Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.